Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Bad, good, and crazy martinis today, since we'll start with the bad. I don't think it's going to be a huge shock to anyone that the bad martini is that Terry McAuliffe is going to be our new governor here in the state of Virginia. He defeated Ken Cuccinelli last night in a much closer race than a lot of people suspected, certainly the pollsters, and we'll get to that a little bit more in the second martini. We've been speculating for a while about why Cuccinelli was behind for the vast majority of this race, and Jim, in about 30 seconds, I wrote down about eight different reasons here. Outspent exponentially, a lack of establishment GOP support at the national and state level. He was kind of wooden on the trail, didn't respond well to McAuliffe's incessant attacks. Bob McDonnell turned from an asset into probably a liability or a non-factor at best. The shutdown probably didn't work in his favor. Robert Sarvis, take your pick. What's the biggest reason why this didn't work out for Ken Cuccinelli?
When you end up, you know, with that, all those good reasons, and the margin is only about 2.5%, you start thinking any one of them. If they'd gone, you know, if you've been able to mitigate any one of those factors, you probably would have been in a better situation. But look, to me, it's kind of like a domino effect, which is, you know, around May, Terry McAuliffe begins his spending campaign. It begins to dominate the airwaves. Because of that, Ken Cuccinelli's poll numbers began to drop. Because the poll numbers began to drop, that's why the RNC and other organizations stopped, putting in so much resources in early fall. And it all kind of stems from that. So, you know, there's a lot of discussion this morning of a lot of people who are really frustrated with the RNC for only spending $3 million. They spent $9 million for Bob McDonnell back 4 years ago. I think the RNC deserves, you know, a certain amount of the criticism. They do deserve a certain amount of the blame. I've seen lots of people speculating that Reince Priebus is out to get the Tea Party and stuff like that. Look, for most of this, you know, fall, Ken Cuccinelli was down by 7 to 9 points. It didn't look like it was going to be all that close. And I would ask Republicans, how much do you want the RNC to spend on a race where the guy doesn't look like he's going to be that close? A lot of them are saying, well, more than that. But okay, but, you know, considering all the Senate races they have to keep an eye on for next year, all the governor's races, the 400, you know, and all the House races they have to spend, you could only commit $5 to $10 million in so many races. And they decided at this point this wasn't looking good for them, and they decided they were, you know, they put money in getting out the vote, but they wouldn't do it in TV advertising. Now, if Ken Cuccinelli had been able to, never mind like keep pace, but simply not get as blown out by McAuliffe as he did, then maybe it doesn't look like a 7 to 9 point margin through most of the fall. Then maybe it looks like 4, 5, 6 points, and then maybe everybody stays a little more interested. So a lot of finger pointing, a lot of anger, a lot of bitter recrimination over this one. And it stings because I think we all were ready for Cuccinelli to lose by a sizable margin. And the fact that it was close makes a lot of Republicans think, you know, if there had been two more weeks of coverage of how terrible Obamacare is, then maybe things would have turned out very different. And that kind of, maybe that leads to our good martini.
It certainly does. I would just say on top of that, I think one of the things that people were upset about was how much the RNC did pour into New Jersey, which was obviously a lopsided race in the other direction. And they think those resources could have been better allocated in Virginia. But as you mentioned, there's a whole lot of aspects here. Obviously, all of this is in hindsight now, but hopefully lessons learned for future campaigns so we don't have this same problem the next time around. On to the good martini, and Jim alluded to it. Even folks like Chuck Todd were saying this morning that if there had been another week in this race, and other Democrats were telling Chuck Todd this, that it's possible that Cuccinelli would have won this thing just because that's how unpopular this law always has been, but especially now that folks are seeing the myriad of problems with the rollout, not just the website, but folks getting kicked off their insurance, and that promise was obviously violated. Those now shopping for new plans are seeing their premiums skyrocket, all sorts of other things. The president essentially not telling the truth all the way through and now doubling down on that. So, Jim, in addition to obviously what is a very solid Chris Christie win in New Jersey, there are some silver linings here, even though the most competitive race of the night didn't go our way.
Yeah, and like I said, the good news is the evolving conventional wisdom, and I think accurate conventional wisdom, is that Obamacare very nearly destroyed the lead that Terry McAuliffe had spent the whole year building. And like I said, that was looking like a 7 to 9 percentage point lead. And we'll see how this affects the other races, but it's possible there's going to be a giant liability. By the way, it's worth noting, rates of Republican enthusiasm for Cuccinelli were pretty low for much of this year. And now the last one I saw showed that Cuccinelli got 93% of the Republican vote. meaning the issue of Obamacare brought Republicans home and it built up the margin amongst independents again. Obamacare is a giant political albatross for Democrats right now. Now, is it certain to be quite the same albatross in November 2014? I have a hard time believing that within the next year, Americans feel a whole lot better about Obamacare. I think that, you know, the website is just one of several problems they have to deal with. There are still people getting their plans canceled. There is still the sticker shock when they look at the prices on the exchange once the exchange websites are actually functioning. People have to start paying them. And oh, by the way, the employer mandate kicks in next year, which means possibly employers will be canceling their plans in the fall of 2014. So that's another reason for Democrats to be very fearful. So it may be that the Republicans have found an issue that is going to work resoundingly in their favor in fall of next year. While Democrats can hope to mitigate that feeling, you know, over the next year, at this point, I think you have to say there's, you know, they've been on the job for a month and change, and things don't look that much better at all.
That's clearly the case, and I think you hit on the big issue, and that's the employer mandate, the president kicking that down the road, hoping to avoid that being an albatross in 2014. But you're seeing all the chaos that happened before Election Day 2013, just with the minutia, as the administration calls it, with those who are in the individual market and all the chaos that that has led to. Once employers start saying no thank you to the recommendations and requirements and the mandates of Obamacare, that those numbers are going to be exponentially higher next year. So I think this could potentially be an even greater migraine headache for the Democratic Party, which would be fantastic news. Last point I'll make on Virginia is Terry McAuliffe, who wasn't as annoying as I expected him to be in his victory speech last night, said something that didn't grate on me from his perspective, but he twice thanked all the Republicans in the room who crossed over and voted for him. Look, I understand that there are people who don't like the nominees of the party they're traditionally with, but why you would vote for McAuliffe just is just beyond me. If you want to sit it out, even if you wanted to go with a faux libertarian, I would disagree with you strongly, but to go all the way over and vote for McAuliffe just makes no sense if you consider yourself a conservative in any way.
But well, judging from the exit polls, Greg, when Terry McAuliffe thanked all the Republicans in the room who voted for him, it's because all the Republicans who voted for him were actually in that room. I actually was watching something I had said on NRA News back in September. Terry McAuliffe really, really tried to pitch himself as Mr. Bipartisan, even though he'd been a Democratic Party fundraiser his entire life and chair of the DNC and all that stuff. He, you know, was trying to run as the bipartisan uniter, and I think that sales pitch flopped, that he actually, you know, very much won because of the strength of the Democratic Party in Virginia, getting just enough votes out of where they needed in Northern Virginia and government workers and the usual loyal Democrats here. Only other good news I can think of, Greg, is, look, chances are 4 years from now, Terry McAuliffe will probably not be in office. It could be he's resigned to become finance chair of Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. It could be that he has taken a position in a Hillary Clinton administration or indictment. Your call. You'll place your bets now. We'll see. Terry McAuliffe, you know, is not going to be a fun governor for you and I to have. But the good news is it's probably not a problem that's going to last very long.
Well, 4 years at the most. But any one of those is completely feasible. So I'm not going to take the bet. It's still possible for the Republicans to win the attorney general race. That's extremely close and probably won't be known officially till towards the end of the month. And also, the House of Delegates still strongly in Republican hands. I don't think they lost any net seats as a result of last night. So thin win by McAuliffe did not carry any coattails whatsoever. So that's happy news as well. Okay, we don't talk a lot about Canadian politics, and I think every one of you knows where we're going here. In the crazy martini, and Jim, whenever there's an allegation against an American politician of personal misconduct, whether it's infidelities or corruption or what have you, the instinct is always to deflect, deny, and distract. And Toronto Mayor Rob Ford has kind of done that as well with this latest scandal. There's allegations. There's a video of him smoking crack cocaine. He says, I don't believe it. There's no video. This is all fabricated. Well, turns out there is a video. Here's Mayor Ford outside of his office yesterday visiting with reporters.
Do you smoke crack cocaine?
Exactly. Yes, I have smoked crack cocaine.
When,
but
sir?
No. Do I? Am I an addict? No.
When have you
Have I tried it? Probably in one of my drunken stupors, probably approximately about a year ago.
And here's the best part. Later on in this visit with the reporters, he's like shocked that they didn't expect this of him.
I was probably saying it around about a year ago, but I don't know exactly. That's why I want to see. I don't even remember after some of the stuff that you guys see me, the state I've been in.
You guys have seen me completely blotto before. Why are you surprised at all that I smoked crack?
reporters, I'm high on crack now. I had heard a little bit about this story, and then around mid-afternoon yesterday, he has his press conference, and, you know, all the news networks cut to it live. Then it's not every day the mayor of a major city admits to smoking crack. That only happens back usually in the late 80s in Washington, D.C. And everybody all had – a lot of people have very similar reactions. One, it is really, really tragic that neither John Candy nor Chris Farley are alive to play him in the movie, because he just gave off that vibe of the big, burly, particularly John Candy being Canadian. There was something kind of hapless about him. He kind of felt sorry for the guy. Because honest to goodness, his excuse is, look, voters of Toronto, I am not an addict. I am an alcoholic. When your excuse is that, well, I was in a drunken stupor, that's not as exculpatory as you think it is. And the other thing is that, look, to paraphrase Lloyd Benson, Mayor Ford, I know drunken stupors. Drunken stupors are friends of mine. At no point have I smoked crack during my drunken stupor. So the idea that, you know how it is, you have one too many beers, the next thing you know, you're inhaling a crack pipe. You know, that maybe Canada has a really terrible crack epidemic. I'm kind of surprised by that. A bizarre turn of events. We hope this man gets the help he needs. It's quite conceivable he's not the right man to be at the helm in Toronto right now. To give you a sense of how bad it's gotten for you know, folks up in Canada, Greg, earlier today, people in San Diego were saying, man, that mayor's messed up. Bob Filner said, that guy's got a problem, okay? You know, and then he offered to hug it out.
But he's vowing to run for re-election in 2014, so we're going to need to pay attention to that campaign.
Mayor Ford, he won't crack under the pressure. Don't blow it, you know.
Jim, you are off until next Tuesday. Have a fabulous break, and we'll talk to you then.
I am going on my traditional post-election relaxation. Don't worry, America. Things can only get better.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Charlie Cook will be here in place of Jim on Thursday. Please join us then for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.